Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Tuesday, January 31st. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Trumbull.
And I'm Troy Sambajani.
Stephanie Haynes reports today in a story that will wrap up our daily offering on a joyful example of business adaptation on a tropical beach. We asked her to first set up the story here.
For much of his life, Brady Darius Perry was a lobsterman. His island of Spanish Wells in the Bahamas revolved around the fishery. His friends and family members spent their years catching the spiny lobsters that are mostly shipped off to international restaurant chains and markets. Here, fishers don't set traps. They dive along the ocean floor to retrieve the crustaceans from human-made shelters. Mr. Perry spent days and weeks this way, he told me, rope-towed by a boat past sharks and needlefish and coral reefs. But then Hurricane Matthew hit, and the storm, which scientists say was extra fierce because of warmer ocean temperatures, destroyed his family's underwater lobster infrastructure. It would have cost millions to rebuild their business, he told me, and so they pivoted. Around that time, he explains, tourists were flocking to the Exumas, another chain of islands in the Bahamas, to see the swimming pigs, a small porcine community that lives on the beach. If you're doing a double take here, that's okay. I did too. You can read more about it in my article in today's issue. Mr. Perry figured the pigs would be popular where he lives too. With other locals, he started Pig Island and a new tourist industry. I met Mr. Perry late last year on his boat, the Salty Pig, part of his family's The Salty Pig Adventures charter service. The pigs get people here, he said with a smile, but then he can share the other ecological jewels of his home, the white sandbars and soft stingrays and flourishing reefs. I asked if he missed fishing. We adapted, he answered with a shrug. Indeed, I thought, global warming is forcing adaptations across the world in economics and lifestyles, politics and habitats. Often these shifts involve loss. People must reimagine their homes and futures. But Mr. Perry reminded me that there can be surprises that accompany change, even some as joyfully ludicrous as pigs on a tropical beach.
Now, today's stories. Our first story, growing threats from North Korea have some in South Korea calling for a nuclear weapons program. Experts say what's needed is a strengthening of trust and a commitment to cooperation under the U.S. nuclear umbrella.
President Yoon Suk-yeol warned earlier this month that South Korea might go nuclear if security keeps deteriorating on the Korean peninsula. Although he later walked back the comments, Mr. Yoon's willingness to raise the nuclear option publicly reflects its growing popularity among South Koreans, 71% of whom favor their country developing its own nuclear arsenal, according to a recent poll. Such a move would be very costly, but some consider it necessary as North Korea ramps up its nuclear capabilities and as other geopolitical shifts, such as Russia's nuclear saber rattling, cast doubt on the United States' guarantee to retaliate against an attack as mandated by its nuclear umbrella treaty. Nevertheless, Seoul and Washington have reiterated that they are working together to strengthen their deterrence strategy. The country's defense heads pledged Tuesday to hold a tabletop exercise in February on response options to the North Korean nuclear threat. Reliable U.S. extended deterrence would be a more effective deterrent than South Korea pursuing its own nuclear program, says Rachel Min-Young Lee, former North Korea analyst for the U.S. government. But at a time when anxieties are running high, she says Washington must take steps to build greater trust. South Koreans need stronger assurances from the U.S. This story was written by Ann Scott Tyson for The Monitor.
House Republicans say they are trying to get needed transparency on how the pandemic started, but others worry a partisan probe will further muddy the waters.
3 years after the pandemic began in Wuhan, China, there is still a rancorous debate over what triggered it. U.S. public health officials and many scientists say the available evidence strongly indicates that the novel coronavirus spilled over from wildlife to humans, as happened in previous outbreaks. They consider the question virtually settled. But a lack of transparency from China, as well as critics charge the United States, has allowed speculation to persist that the pandemic may have been started with an inadvertent lab leak at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Whether that's the case or not, some say the failure to be forthcoming has undermined the public trust needed to build consensus and move forward. The stakes are immense, with U.S.-China relations and funding for scientific research and pandemic prevention hanging in the balance. House Republicans are now poised to use their new majority to deploy Congress investigatory powers. The first hearing will be held tomorrow on February 1st. Democratic Representative Bill Foster of Illinois, a physicist, says Congress can play a key role in establishing greater transparency and improving international protocols. This is a common interest of all humanity, he says. This story was written by Krista Case Bryant in Washington for The Monitor.
Islamophobia in India is rising, but so is interest in Delhi's historically Muslim neighborhoods and respect for the capital's multicultural heritage. For some tour guides and historians, that's cause for hope.
Blossoming interest in Delhi's roots as a mosaic of cultures and religions can be seen in everything from the newfound hot status of historical neighborhoods to the rising popularity of local history blogs and walking tours. Historians and sociologists say the wave of interest is at least in part a response to growing Hindu nationalism and discrimination against the country's large Muslim minority. Some argue it signals a shift in how Indians view their history as something that should be respected, examined, and learned from. Yet skeptics say the small slice of the population with interest in history will never match the majority who are indifferent and susceptible to alternative versions of Delhi's heritage. Nevertheless, that desire to counter rising intolerance is one reason software engineer Zain Patel spent hours touring Delhi's oldest neighborhoods on a recent work trip. I absolutely think more Indians are wanting to know more about the very old mix of cultures that made us who we are, says Mr. Patel, who's from Mumbai. Nationalism and thinking we are the product of one main culture is more prevalent and is spreading. But I think knowing the truth about our past is one small way to stand up to the hatred. This story was written by Howard LaFranchi in New Delhi for The Monitor.
In France, strict classrooms are giving way to ones where feelings are discussed more openly. How might that shift change students' experiences and French society?
The Bienfaisance Preschool in Paris is one of a growing number of institutions that are working to change the way public education functions in France. What was once a distanced, authoritative approach is beginning to resemble a model more common in North America, one that promotes student well-being and positive relationships between students and teachers. At the heart of the shift are teaching methods that promote the emotional bond between caregiver and child. Progress has been slow on a national scale, in a country where education is highly centralized and results are often hard to come by. But educators at the grassroots level are getting on board, as more research points to the link between emotional well-being at school and its benefits in adulthood. If we can help people build a sense of attachment and security at school during childhood, they will be able to better handle uncertainties in life, says Michael Delage, a psychiatrist at the nonprofit Vivre en Famille and a specialist in secure attachment theory. There's no doubt that what we learn at school affects how we act as adults. This story was written by Colette Davidson in Paris for The Monitor.
Sometimes joy arrives in unexpected ways. In the Bahamas, which have long boasted sparkling beaches and turquoise waters, the hottest attractions now have snouts, hooves, and a willingness to hang out with humans.
We don't like to resort travel, says Gina Goldman from Los Angeles. We like to adventure. Once we heard there were pigs here, we couldn't get here fast enough. As she speaks, she's stroking the head of a now sleeping piglet she has befriended. Here in the Bahamas, islands with pristine beaches have also become known for pig excursions. During the past decade, the activity has exploded in popularity. Visitors to the Bahamas walk by floor-to-ceiling photographs of pigs on the way to baggage claim. The pig's popularity speaks to joy, our relationship with animals, economics, and perhaps just plain weirdness. The activity is not without controversy. Critics see it as exploitative of the pigs. Some pigs have nipped at humans. Even some locals involved in the tours have scratched their heads at tourists' fascination. But Jesse Higgs, who works for the four-footed inhabitants of Pig Island, says he's come to understand how there is, indeed, something simply joyful about pigs on a beach. I love it, he says. They all have different personalities. The pig named Brownie, for instance, is his favorite. I can't call it work no more. This story was written by Stephanie Haynes in Pig Island, Eleuthera, Bahamas, for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on checks and balance in Israel. The world rarely sees leaders of one democracy laying down the law to other leaders about the need for independent courts. Yet that was the extraordinary scene in Jerusalem on Monday. An official of the United States, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, warned the official of another country, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, about a proposed measure that would allow Parliament to override Supreme Court rulings by a slim majority. In recent weeks, tens of thousands of Israelis have protested against the proposed changes. Mr. Blinken said Israeli-U.S. ties are rooted in shared principles of equal administration of justice for all, the equal rights of minority groups, and the rule of law. An erosion of democracy worldwide has led to similar cases of leaders defending a core safeguard of individual rights and civic equality. A separate judiciary is crucial to enforcing constitutional principles that protect people from the overreach of a majority. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. For more Monitor audio, including our serial podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. Please join us again tomorrow when we'll be covering how Democrats might put a different state first in the presidential primary elections. Meanwhile, in an art story, you'll learn why musician Ibrahim Maalouf's trumpet has an extra valve. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how the timeless truths found in the Bible-based textbook of Christian Science inspire progress and healing, as a woman experienced firsthand when she found herself in challenging times and began reading the book. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton, Tim Malone, and Troy Sambajan.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2023.